This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. This is Ben, aka Boston Yuga. We another week of coronavirus, another week that we're all kind of stuck in the house, and want to highlight some people that are kind of, you know, doing a little bit of everything in the wrestling industry. So I want to bring on Damon Windsor. Damon, welcome to the show.
Hey Ben, thanks for having me on, man.
So you're basically sort of you're in the Oklahoma area, correct?
That I am, yeah. I'm located in southern Oklahoma, about like half an hour from Texas.
And you're basically a jack of all trades in that area. Everything from, you know, in-ring, out-of-ring, announcer, referee, manager, graphic designer. We'll get into a lot of that. But talk about coming up in the Oklahoma scene, because a lot of people who've listened to this show, and actually myself included, don't really know much about Oklahoma independent wrestling.
There's not a whole lot to know, unfortunately. There's a lot of probably like 11 or so different companies that run sporadically. You know, they're good for their crowd. I don't want to bury people too much, but it's nothing to write home about. And there's been, I don't think anyone come out of this scene and actually go anywhere in a long time. So the guys who I actually broke in with were a pretty talented crew. I broke in while they were on top. Guys like Brad Michaels, who had gone to OVW, and Christopher Matthews, who had gone to OVW. They were all very skilled and known in the area, and are widely respected in the Great Plains and like Texas area. Since then, you don't get a whole lot of guys who have really branched out, though.
Do you think that you learned more or less coming up in the Oklahoma scene than someone who grew up in a maybe more fertile background? And we'll talk about your versatility in a second, but do you kind of wish you were in a different area, or are you pretty happy that you were, you know, where you were at? Because you're a 10-year vet, correct?
Yeah, and there's, you know, at the beginning of my career, I was lucky because I benefited from being a big fish, literally a 6.5-foot tall fish in a pond. Like, you know, 5'8", 5'9" guys. So I was immediately comfortable, but then like I was put in good positions and I was happy and everything was fun. But then I look back now and I'm like, God, I wish I'd had more competition. Like I wish I had been in a more cutthroat area. And then like for a long time, I worked for a place called Impact Zone Wrestling, and it was the top tier in anywhere around this area. But then again, like, that's not Philadelphia. That's not Chicago. Yeah. It's not New York.
What does that mean in the big scheme of things?
Right. Yeah. You know, like they produced probably 7 years of weekly television, and who's ever seen it? You know, we got on Philadelphia. We got some traction because we got a few Comcast sports specials on Philly and in Houston. That's cool. And like San Francisco, but it was too little too late, really. And it was the burden of putting that all together really put a strain on the company, and so it really wasn't anything that could be like a continuous thing. So yeah, like you can make all the content in the world, but if you don't have distribution, nobody's ever going to see it.
So what you learned basically in that, and just talking to you a little bit, is that you learned to be versatile. Talk about some of the roles you've had in the Oklahoma scene, and you know what you learned, and maybe some stories about, you know, times you may have been just kind of thrown in to try something new without any training.
Well, if you know, when you think about like indie wrestling and like indie-rific kind of indie wrestling, that's the Oklahoma scene for the most part. Like it is, I've been the first thing I ever did was I was a ring announcer because they didn't have a ring announcer that day. They had a normal one that they brought in every 2 weeks or whatever, and he just didn't show. So I'm wearing a suit. I look professional. I can speak and say words clearly, and I don't have any crazy Southern accent. So, you know, let me do it. I look pretty decent. And so I volunteered. I did it. And I that's actually how I got in with a lot of guys. But a guy by the name of Brad Michaels had this like 35-second intro just Bad Street, Bad XGA, Bad Street in the USA, CEO of the USA, Bad Brad Michaels. And I just spit that out to him. I was like, it's that, right? And he was like, yeah, what's your name? And like, we just, you know, we kind of became fast friends after that, because I guess he'd been trying to get announcers everywhere to even get that right for 6 months at that point. So it's always out of necessity. After that, I went to a company called Sooner World Class, and it was a place that had no flyers. It had no real logo. They didn't build any big shows or anything. So I got there and I was like, hey, how about we do this? Like a big show every 6 months. And how about you let me take over your MySpace? Let me take over your flyers for you. Let me build you a logo. And, you know, just out of wanting the place that I was working to be the best it could be, I really just, there were so many unchecked boxes. I just decided to check them all myself.
And not everyone may be, you know, gifted at, you know, digital design and things like that, but I think it speaks to, you know, there's spots for everyone in the wrestling industry, especially if you're willing to just volunteer and, you know, be open to ideas.
Yeah, and even if you're not, like, if you don't have a particular skill or trade, you got 2 feet and 2 hands and you can hand out flyers. You can go to local businesses and ask if you can put them up, and most places will let you, because then 99.9% of independent wrestling fails because they don't have distribution and nobody even knows it's there.
So in Oklahoma, how do you draw a crowd then in Oklahoma? You know, how do you, you know, without the, you know, that distribution and stuff like that, what do you measure your success by?
There's, you know, in Oklahoma, I will say that there's a Tulsa crowd that will pretty much keep an eye on the guys they like. And there's about 5 or 6 areas up there that run. And you'll find a lot of the same fans at each one of those. A company that does draw some good eyes to the area is Wrestling for a Cause. They are a charity wrestling company that donates their proceeds to cancer victims. Okay. And helps them in their fight. They get a lot of first time fans there. Well, they'll draw in people, you know, because they're people looking to give back, and a lot of people who are associated with whoever they're benefiting, and that actually ends up leading to a lot of return fans, and you know, people who will give it a secondary shot. But generally there's a crowd you'll see over and over in Tulsa. There's a crowd you'll see over and over in Oklahoma City. And that's probably 40 to 50 people in general. And then outside of that, they've got to bring in like a big name or something like that, even to pop 100. Now, out of Ardmore, there's been a place called World Class Revolution Wrestling, who's Jerry Bostick is their promoter, and he started putting on big name shows, like huge names, just like 16 different names, and would bring them into the casinos and things like that, and he would draw big crowds, you know, like 1,000 here, 1,000 that he'd in a casino. I don't know if he had 1,000, but he had a bunch in the casino. And then
it's got to get expensive though too if you're bringing in all those names.
Very
high risk, high reward.
He had a lot of loss leader programs where it would be like, let's go in Oklahoma City, kick the door down, and we're going to shoot for breaking even. You know, like we might take it on the chin this one time, but having the Young Bucks there for an autograph signing, he had Matt and Jeff Hardy the week that the Final Deletion came out.
Oh, that's
like
cool.
The first like big broken Matt Hardy thing that broke the internet. Like,
Damon, you there?
Happy to be, because they'd already signed. Uh-huh. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah,
yeah. He put on those big shows, and he might lose a little bit, but he'd draw a big audience to it. And so he was able to set up kind of a circuit, kind of like the old Mid-South area, where he would hit like, you know, a place where he'd in Kansas, and a couple places in Arkansas, a couple places in Oklahoma, a school here and there to kind of help as a fundraiser. And then, but he had a really nice little circuit going where he could draw a really decent crowd. But then again, he does always have at least a handful of names normally. So that definitely helps.
So is it an area where unless you have, you know, XWE star, XTNA star, whoever, you're not going to draw?
Let me illustrate it for you. We recently co-promoted with Impact to do two pay-per-views, and one in Lawton, Oklahoma, which is a military town, which has a good little population. If you really got a lot of distribution out there, you could probably get a few thousand in that big arena there. And then one in Enid, Oklahoma, which has a 4,000 to 5,000 seat arena, I think. And those both drew very poorly just because it's not a great scene for it. Like, you've got to beat them over the head with it to get anybody to come out to see anything. Like, they were, and that's with the current full roster of Impact and people like Bostic was bringing in, like MVP, and we had Stefan Bonner on that card, and they just wouldn't draw. And that's with current like a full roster of TV ready stars.
So how do you, I guess, keep your head up, you know, with a lot of this sort of stuff? And how do you kind of, you know, help, you know, yourself, you know, kind of further a career when you're in a situation where it's less fertile than maybe other situations? How do you kind of keep motivated?
Well, I have to, I was lucky enough to make a few friends through World Class that have kind of helped me. They've helped motivate me forward. Like I spoke about MVP. MVP is a kind of a quasi mentor of mine. He was the first name that Jerry ever put me against. And I'd wrestled Al Snow before, but it was like it had been a long time, and it was on a tag. This was one on one in a decent, like a semi main event kind of situation. I was nervous as hell, and we had a ton of fun out there. And
I've heard he's stiff as fuck, though.
Man, I loved it. Then again, I love working Lance Archer too. So maybe that's just my style. That's just the exact same thing Archer said. He's like, man, I'm sorry, I'm a stiff prick. I'm just going to apologize ahead of time. And afterwards, I was like, man, that was great. So I guess I just don't mind it so much. But MVP is, he's very snug. But we had a few matches and then this big blow off street fight. And we were on the loop together for like a handful of shows. And by the last one, he like allowed me to call the whole finish and everything. And he was very, I would say he was one of the most like open to my ideas, and then allowed us to do them. And they went over like crazy. And he gave me a ton of credit to Jerry, and was he was a great mentor to me and gave me a lot of good advice, and still does to this day, honestly.
Yeah, I said I've heard he's just a fountain of information. I saw him on the Wrestlers thing on Vice TV, and he just seems like a guy who, you know, would be perfect in something like an agent role in WWE or something like that, because he's seen everything, done everything, both in the ring and in life, and could really kind of help. You said he's a mentor to you. I think he could be a really good mentor to everyone, really.
Yeah, he's one of those guys where he's probably not going to seek you out and try and tell you to do what you're doing, because if you don't care to ask, then you probably aren't smart enough to want to know, if that makes sense. Sure. But if you go to him and you ask him a question, he's going to give you the bluntest answer possible. And I'm sure that rubs probably a lot of people the wrong way, but I find it incredibly valuable, because I never want it was great, whatever, thanks, and that's it. You know, I'd much rather have critiques, because you're never going to get better unless you're in there with someone better than you.
That's something I've heard a lot on that show. Now. Yeah.
I don't know if you're aware, but he actually is an agent for Raw on the Raw brand now. So
I knew he was kind of moving into some sort of backstage role. I didn't know if he was officially an agent or not. So that's awesome for him, because that guy deserves it.
Yeah, I saw the last time I saw him was actually at a World Class show in Carrollton, Texas, and it was the week before the Rumble, and I was like, hey man, he was telling me that he was going to bring his kid to the Rumble, and I was like, you mess around and get in that thing, you let me know. You know, and he was like, ah, nah, I ain't going to do that. I ain't going to worry about it. And here it is. He was in the Rumble, and he was on Raw 2-3 times now, and now he's backstage. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. It might not happen. I was like, okay.
So what other wrestlers have you had a chance to interact with that have given you some good advice and given you some, you know, because you know, they're bringing in all these names. You know, a lot of these guys are fountains of knowledge. You know, who else has given you good advice and been able to serve your career well?
Man, when we were really hitting the loop and when we had like a bunch of names at every show, I was never the guy put with the up and coming star. I was always the guy, because again, I'm 6.5 foot tall. So I'm the guy who they put against like the WWE guy, you know, like I'm the guy they put against Jake Hager, because I'm the only guy who he doesn't look like he could rip their head off just by looking at him, you know? So I was lucky enough to not really get the indie darlings, but I got the Jake Hagers and I got Jeff Jarrett. And
you wrestled Jeff Jarrett?
No, I had a spot with Jeff Jarrett. We had I had a match in El Dorado, Arkansas, and I was going into a diatribe afterwards and trash talking the crowd there, and out comes Jeff Jarrett, and we have like this 5-minute promo back and forth with each other. That's and then cool. I blindside attack him. We go back and forth a little bit. He ends up hitting me with the stroke. And it was one of those times where I was like, man, working with a pro is so much different. Like, you don't have to, like, he talks differently. Like, the flow is different. You don't have to think nearly as much because you're not having to worry about where he's going to be. Everything, like, you know where you're supposed to be, and he's where he's supposed to be, and everything just gels, and it's awesome.
So...
As far as names, yeah. Though, like I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the one name I probably marked out for more than anyone, and that's Mean Gene Oakland.
Oh, yeah.
In my first Oaklamania, which is like world class's big yearly event, there was a lot of different names, and like some of them I had the pleasure to work with already. And when I saw Gene's name on the flyer, I messaged Jerry, and I was like, man, I think I'm more excited to meet Gene Okerlund than probably the entirety of the rest of the card combined. Like, and there's like 30 names on there. I just like, that's just my childhood. He was the ambassador to the thing I loved.
He's the voice of our childhood, man.
Yeah. And there's the best stick man of all time. There's nobody mm-hmm. better at leading a backstage interview. And I was like, Jerry, I don't know what he's actually going to be wanting to do or what we can get him to do. I was like, but if I can work with him in any capacity, I was like, I don't care if I'm just like able to record him doing it, anything. So Jerry got in his ear and was like, hey, I've got this guy who really wants to work with you. And so when I went and spoke with him, like, I got to produce him all day long.
Oh, wow.
I got to shoot a vignette with him, a backstage interview with him. And then he and I actually got to become kind of friends, and I got to become his unofficial handler at all the world class events that he was at. He'd come to me and be like, what are we doing today? And we just kind of, I'd be his guy. So that was, and I can't, like, no other way could I ever imagine ever winding up in that spot. So something I'm very, very thankful for.
I saw him come into the hotel at WrestleCade, and this was probably within a year of him passing, and he literally walks in the door and says, who's got a drink for me? And I'm like, so on brand, man. So on brand.
He's a fantastic drinker. He's all. Every time I, you know, we'd have an after party or something like that, he'd have a few glasses of wine. You know, just life of the party. Always having a good time. Never a downer. Never grumpy to be there. No matter the conditions, no matter the heat or what time it is or how long he's been doing things. Like, always true professional and a truly great guy.
Now, you talked a little bit about, you know, you've done producing, you've been in front of the camera, behind the camera. What aspects do you enjoy the most, I guess, out of all the, kind of the things you've done? And is there anything we've left out, too? You know, is there anything else that you've done, you know, in the wrestling industry that that you really, you know, enjoyed?
When I was in Lawton for Impact Zone Wrestling, like I said, they had a weekly television show, and it was legit television studio wrestling. So... with kind of a skeleton crew, honestly. So we each had to, like, a lot of people, like guys like Randy Price and Jermaine Johnson, had to wear multiple hats and make sure that everything ran, because nobody else was going to make sure of it. The boss was like, hey, this stuff needs to be done. And, you know, he was the kind of guy who, he's not Mr. Nice Guy. He's going to chew your ass if it's not done. So we would just, you know, buck up and just make sure it got done. I got to learn how to be a cameraman, a director for like vignettes. I got to write scripts for highlight videos and for hype videos. We got to make all sorts of crazy things. Like basically every single position you can imagine having backstage and production wise. And then at that same place, I was an announcer for a while. I was a commentator for a while. I was a referee for a show. Like I don't think there's anything I haven't done and haven't been willing to do, because it's all wrestling, man. And I love it. You know, every chance to do something in the wrestling realm, I want to do.
And that's what I've heard from a lot of promoters too, is that, you know, someone who's willing, someone who's never going to say no, someone who's open to ideas, those are the sort of people that they want around them.
Yeah, and I personally, I drive a lot of promoters crazy because I push my ideas way too hard. Like, I don't know if it's way too hard, but I'm like, hey, I have an idea for this. Hey, I have an idea for that. And a lot of times it's not me. I'm like, hey, this guy could do this. What about if these two were a team, then we could do this. I think this would be an awesome finish for this. Like, and so I'm the very utilizable person, but I'm also the guy who might drive you crazy sometimes.
Sure.
Because I don't stop. I can't turn it off. If I see someone and I'm like, dude, that dude's really good, but he's trying to do this character that's just not him. What if we could do it this way? Or what if we could do it that way? In Lawton, for instance, we had a guy who was kind of had a sheepish personality. And so people started calling him Sheepy in his first run there. And that was a very derogatory nickname for him in his first run. And when he came back, he was Jake O'Brien. He was this kind of established, like, strongman style competitor, and he just had no actual personality though. So I was like, you know, like we kind of brainstormed, and I was like, what if we call them Sheepy? You know, I was like, it was Sheepy O'Brien. And I was like, that sounds like a cool Irish guy. And
sounds like someone in a pub in Dublin. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, oh, there'd be Sheepy O'Brien over there. And like, it was just so much more vibrant than just Jake. And so I was like, what if he's this brawler? And within a week or two, he had his own t-shirt. He was knockout punching people. He was a completely different guy. Like that kind of thing, other than actually wrestling and cutting promos in front of a live crowd, like being able to mold and kind of just dress up another performer and make them kind of a bigger, more vibrant character. That's probably my favorite thing.
Now, one thing you've been doing recently is a lot of graphic design work. Talk about your graphic design background and some of the work you've done.
Oh, yeah. I forget I do that sometimes. I went to school for it, actually, when I was in high school, and then didn't really do anything for it, toward it for a while, because after high school, I kind of just, you know, was just working, and then I got into wrestling. And actually, wrestling's what brought it back out, because, like I said, I worked for a few places that didn't have flyers, and I was like, well, I think I can do this. And I did. And then when I went to Lawton and worked that television show, a lot of people didn't have t-shirts. They didn't have anyone to make their t-shirts, or the guy who was also doing 7,000 other things. Sure. So I took that off his hands and I became their t-shirt guy. And then, you know, I just kind of done it for free for my friends and the local guys for a long time. And then one time I was designing something for someone, and my wife said, hey, why don't you just make a Facebook page and put all your stuff up there? I think people might pay you to do this. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I have. And then, you know, when I actually went through it, I was like, oh, I have like 75 designs to put up. And okay, I've done this many flyers and this, that, and the other. And within a week or two, I had some people who were paying me to do some designs for them. And since then, I've been doing the majority of like the scene's graphic design work, like people's gear. I know you're familiar with the Diamond Dogs, Luke Langley, yeah, and Graham Bell. I've done the
Dear majority close personal of friend Graham Bell. Yeah.
Been on yes. The show. And I'm sorry to hear that, but, I did Yeah, their gear. I did their singles t-shirts. I've done their Diamond Dogs t-shirts. They're awesome guys. They never, you know, like they always come back and they always have new ideas and everything. They're good to go back and forth with. Then through World Class, I actually was able to do a shirt for Iceman King Parsons. I will.
24 minutes. You there?
Hello.
There we go. You said you were able to do a shirt for Iceman King Parsons.
Yeah, through World Class, I was able to do a shirt for Iceman King Parsons. I was able to do a shirt for Chavo Guerrero. If you go on his Pro Wrestling Tees page, it's the Pepe Rides Again shirt.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and after that, he had me do a few other things for him, like a banner for when he does appearances, and then I was able to do some stuff for MVP, and then most recently, I had an idea for a shirt, three or four ideas for the same shirt for Chris Jericho, and because he'd been saying, shut your ass on television for going on 4 weeks, and there was no t-shirt, generally. Jericho says something funny, and that night there's a t-shirt.
Yeah, immediately, yeah.
Something, you know, a little bit of the bubbly change, you know, like it broke their sight, you know, in a day's time and was a viral sensation. So I was like, how has he been saying shut your ass on television for 3-4 weeks now, and there's nothing anywhere with it on it? So I tweeted, maybe I was like, hey, when are we going to get a shut your ass shirt? Nothing. Then I tagged Pro Wrestling Tees, and I was like, maybe you could do like one in each city, like, you know, shut your ass, Utah. Nothing. I was like, put it in the Jazz colors or something. No response. I even so when the COVID-19 thing started, I tweeted out like maybe even a special edition, like a wash your hands, cover your mouth, shut your ass. And again, not a whole lot of reply. I got a few likes here and there, but like nothing from them actually. Like, and then finally, I was like, to hell with it. I'll just make it myself. I had a day off, so I put it together. I put it up, and I just said something like, follow the rules of Jericho. Put this up at your workplace. And tagged him in it, and then I still didn't get a retweet off that. Instead, I got an email that night that just said, hey,
at night.
Is that me? Do I keep cutting?
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I didn't get a retweet, but I did get an email that night from Ryan from Pro Wrestling Tees, basically just saying, hey, Jericho saw your design, wants to use it for a t-shirt. And so I thought that was awesome to begin with. Like, I was psyched that just I kind of willed this thing into existence. And then I was even more gobsmacked the next day to find out that it was going to be a fundraiser shirt, that through my design, I was going to be able to help out raising money to help with the relief of all the craziness that's going out there and help research a cure.
So I think that shirt goes to the World Health Organization, correct?
Yeah, the World Health Organization is who it benefits, and they're one of the leaders in research and trying to find a cure, a vaccine, whatever, to just make sure that eventually this doesn't happen again next year when it comes back around this season. You know, like, it's kind of crazy what's going on. It's unprecedented, really, in this time period. And so to be able to help out at all with anything like that is kind of an honor.
So the one last question I got to ask you, told me that your son holds a victory over Cody Rhodes. How did that come about?
Well, again, I've been very blessed to make some pretty good friends. And one of our announcers at World Class was Justin Roberts. He had a long run with us, and it was kind of crazy. I couldn't understand why he wasn't working in the wrestling genre at the time, but there was one place to work. You know, it was like WWE was the only place that's going to pay a professional what he's going to, you know, like anything worth to be paid. So he, excuse me, he was working with us for quite some time. And then, yeah, he got picked up by AEW. And when they came to Dallas, I spoke with him a little bit, and he hooked us up with a couple tickets. I took my wife and my two sons. One of them was only a few months old at the time. And then my oldest son, it was his right around his fifth birthday. And I was like, hey, you know, you want to go to this? And he was excited. He wanted to go. And he asked me if he could dress up as a wrestler. And I said, yeah, we'll find you something. Who do you want to dress up as? And he said, Orange Cassidy, I didn't even know he really knew who that was.
That's amazing.
Very funny. So I ran to the store, got him a couple of denim items and some shades, and we went off down there. And so I text Justin a little bit through there. And I was like, hey, after the show, do you mind if we grab a picture with you? And he's like, yeah, yeah, no problem. After the show, just come down to ringside. So we do. And they're doing it happens to be that the main event of Dark that night is Orange Cassidy and the Best Friends. And so when we go down to ringside, they're talking to people from the crowd and pulling a couple kids in, and they see little mini Orange Cassidy, 4-year-old going on 5 Orange Cassidy on my shoulders. And Cassidy comes over and gets him, puts him in the ring, and they go around asking all the kids what their name is and everything. And so they come around to my son Anderson, and he just goes, whatever, you know, he just Cassidy answer, and the whole place starts chanting his name and everything. And then so he's like, Cody says, all right, I'm gonna put my record on the line. And yeah, he goes right there and he punches in the gut a few times and gets a quick pinfall on him. And so yeah, officially on the internet, so it's on the internet, that means it's true. He holds a victory over Cody Rhodes. So
that's amazing.
I think he's had more national probably screen time than I have already. He's done that Dark spot for AEW. He's, you know, he's had a little moment with John Cena at a WWE event.
Oh, that's cool.
He's been on TV a bunch at MLW. He just, you know, it's tough having a kid so much cuter than you are.
I had the same problem. Well, if people want to find your stuff or contact you for designs or contact you to do one of 10 million jobs in wrestling, how do people find you, damn it?
I was going to say, oh, yeah, I wrestle sometimes, yeah, too. They can find me on all your normal ways. Damon Windsor on Facebook, at Damon Windsor on Twitter. We Are The Altar on Instagram. Those are the three best places. Also, you can, in these times when I can't actually go do any of the bookings I was supposed to do, you can check out my Pro Wrestling Tees store. I just uploaded a new design. I've got three on there so far. And a little bit of income on this time go wrestle at all, so anything there would be appreciated.
Yeah, any little bit helps, especially to people in the independent wrestling industry right now. So people want to find you, it's Damon Windsor on Twitter, Damon Windsor on Facebook.
Hold on, you there? Again, sorry.
So people want to find you, it's Damon Windsor on Twitter, Damon Windsor on Facebook. And you need a good designer, someone who's done something recently for Chris Jericho, this is your guy. Well, I'd like to thank Damon for being on the show. It seems like the network is cut out, but that's okay. So check his stuff out, and we'll be on next with another guest. We are here with one of the up-and-coming stars in the wrestling scene, just signed with Major League Wrestling, and a hell of a guy, really. I wanted to bring him on because he's a full-time wrestler, and I wanted to highlight what's going on right now with full-time wrestlers because they're feeling the pinch more than anybody right now. Because there ain't no wrestling. If you're an independent wrestler, you don't really have that income. You don't have that that safety net. And I want to get the hopes, the dreams, and the fears from one Zachary Cooper. Zach, welcome to the show.
Dude, I appreciate you having me. It's always good seeing you at shows, man. And we never really get enough time to talk. But, you know, now that we get this chance, let's have some fun with it.
Definitely. Definitely, man. Now, you are Canadian, correct?
Yeah, very, 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 very lightly Canadian.
lightly, but enough to be polite and enough to be a good human being.
Oh, you know, it depends. Yeah, we'll go with that. I'm so lightly Canadian that if you look at my MLW bio, it says Tampa, Florida. So, I'm enough Canadian to enjoy syrup and bacon and poutine. But aside from that, I would go full-blown American.
Sure. So how'd you fall in love with wrestling? What was your wrestling story and your journey?
Man, it's all a weird thing. When I first started watching wrestling, I was a young kid, and this is going to make people feel old, but my first match I ever remember watching on TV is when I stumbled upon it watching Scotty Too Hotty versus Booker T on just a random SmackDown. And ever since
Scotty Too Hotty got you into wrestling.
Listen, that's the funny thing, though. So I've always, and I posted this the other day, and I got, you know, a couple people pissed off, whatever. My favorite wrestler of all time is Chris Benoit. I was a huge Chris Benoit fan growing up. But then I always liked the mid-card guys. It's weird. I loved, and I'm sure you've seen this on my Twitter.
Yeah.
I love Muhammad Hassan. And yes, I'm not, you know, I think the character's great. I love Shannon Moore.
That was way ahead of its time, honestly. The Muhammad Hassan thing was like, it was too smart for what was happening, honestly.
Oh, it was so good. And the thing is he was a decent wrestler, which is all he needed to be. And I love guys like Shannon Moore and guys like, you know, I was a huge Mark Jindrak fan. Find me two other people that even like paid attention to Mark Jindrak, let alone remember Mark Jindrak. You know? Like that's how wrestling started for me, man, is just watching those guys and then, you know, recreating it's I always tell this story because people think it's hilarious, but I always seem to end up telling it. I kind of became a huge fan of Rob Van Dam, and we had this couch at my house, and I had a ginormous stuffed bear, and I used to put on the best of RVD DVD and recreate the matches.
And you didn't break your neck.
No, I went through 7 beds, though. I believe the count was up to 7. And I remember one time in particular, I did a Rolling Thunder, and it was the Elimination Chamber from ECW December to Dismember. It was terrible. But I was pretending I was RVD and Rolling Thundered myself and put my backside right through the wall.
That's pretty much a precursor for the bumps you were taking in your wrestling career, actually.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now this all makes sense. Now the highlight video and all the stuff makes complete sense.
So RVD was your guy growing up. You're a bit younger than I am. Was wrestling cool, you know, when you were a kid, or was it one of those sort of things you kind of had to hide?
Oh, I got made fun of religiously, always in school, man. Like, here's the thing. In elementary school, everybody loved John Cena. Everybody knows John Cena. But when I'm sitting there walking around talking about, oh, my God, did you watch Heidenreich wrestle and MVP team up? Everyone's like, okay, you're a little weird. And that's okay. I hit it. And then when I got to high school, I decided, screw it, I'm just going to do whatever I want. And that's pretty much when the backyard stuff happened. And what a fun mess that was.
Yeah, tell me about, because the backyard stuff fascinates the hell out of me. My goal with this podcast, if I do anything else, is I want a Woodward and Bernstein The Backyard Link. And I just want to, like, just open it up to the world. Tell me about backyard wrestling. Spare no detail. I want to know everything and anything about this whole backyard scene that was sprawling in the United States that no one knew about.
Backyard wrestling is awesome, man. What I will say, and everyone, and a lot of people, again, I think we're in an area now where it's kind of the old time vets that kind of look down upon it. But I think nowadays it's a ton more accepted, especially after what Game Changer's been doing. I would definitely say my time in the yard was fun. I started out with a buddy of mine in my backyard on 2 mattresses and a wooden ladder, and we thought we were cool by climbing up 2 steps of the ladder and jumping off. But then it ended up getting more serious, and I was wrestling in the yard with guys like Dexter Beckett, who's you know, Henry Rotten in the yard, but Dexter Beckett was big up in the Pacific Northwest area. You know, I've wrestled kind of in the same circles as Alex Zane and Tony Deppen and those guys. And it's just really cool to see so many of the guys from the yard. And I think Makabe was a part of all that, too. It's cool dudes from the yard.
He won't admit to it.
He will or will not?
Well, it depends on what day you ask him.
Ah, yeah. I understand. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where at this point, like I said, what the yard was is a mess. It's a complete mess, but it's a lot of fun, and it makes you enjoy. It made me enjoy wrestling a lot more than the pros initially did.
Now, this was just the backyard thing. You're just basically working for the boys because there weren't. I mean, you didn't really have many, or did you have crowds?
Oh God, no. Oh no. We invited people. Obviously, they never showed up. But really what it was working for the boys and working for their families and girlfriends and boyfriends or whatever. That's really what it was. And we ended up You know, I remember I've had a hardcore match in the yard where a dude legitimately cheese grated my forehead. But, you know, and I sit here now and I'm like, wow, I would never do something like that in the pros. Fast forward 2 years later, Aaron Epic is sticking skewers in my head twice. So, you know, it's the yard. I can tell you right now, the yard inspired a lot for me.
And you guys were doing like national yard shows, right? I mean, you were traveling all over the place for the yard, right?
So a lot of the guys that I worked with were, I got into the yard scene late, where, yes, the stuff up in Pennsylvania was still going on, which I know that's where Zane used to do a lot of his stuff, or up in Pennsylvania, Jersey, that area.
Because Dan Scotty's told me a lot about that stuff too.
My man Dan, I was supposed, man, I know you saw the announcement. I was on Team Anti-Pineapple because pineapple's terrible. And Dan the Dad, Allie. Yeah, Dan the Dad, Alley Cat, and I were going to have a lot of fun. And I guarantee, I mean, when the whole thing's reset, we're still going to have some fun. But, they traveled a lot, and like I said, I got into the yard late, but I was definitely – there were a couple territories, as we called them, in Florida that had yard backyard feds, and we went around, wrestled there, and it was fun, man. One of the places had a base, like a wooden base, and that's all it was. It was wood, and it was a piece of carpet just laid across the wood, and that was it. And I'm like, wow, this bump sucks.
This seems dangerous as fuck.
Once again, fast forward 2 years later, here's my ass letting Daniel Makabe flip me from the ring and bumping on wooden floors and going through doors and shit. It all
comes full circle.
Anyone who sees anything from the yard is not shocked by anything that I do.
So you were a yarder for a long time, because, I mean, you're still relatively young. I mean, how long did you yard for?
So I started when I was like 14. And oh, so, Jesus. Yeah, I started when I was 14. I was a big ass 14-year-old. Like, I played high school sports and I played.
Well, you people know, who haven't met you, you're a big boy. You run, what, 6'2", 250, 260?
Yeah, about 6'2", 250 right now, yeah. But yeah, I was actually about like 290 when I was yarding, and I actually got up to 340. I was a big boy.
Jesus.
At one point. Yeah, it was like everyone thinks I'm Walter now. Just shit. Wait till you see me back in the day. Now I really look like Walter. But no, it was a lot of fun, man. And it kind of allowed me to just have some fun with wrestling, because everyone knows wrestling's stressful as hell sometimes, and there's a lot of politics and stuff in here. There's not politics in the yard, because we're all out there not really giving a damn. We're just trying to do spots and jump off trees and shit.
Now, I have to ask, you're a 14-year-old kid. Your parents must have absolutely loved this.
So my mom blames my dad for getting me into wrestling. My dad blames my mom for buying me my first action figure. So theoretically, it's both of their faults that I decided to do this. So they can't really have an opinion when it's their fault.
So you were playing football too, right?
I did. Yeah, I played football. I was a center and a tackle and a defensive tackle. Basically, anything you could play on the line, I played. I got hurt really early. It's not that I wasn't good. I got hurt a lot. And, I know, but the funny thing is what I decided to do is, after I kept getting hurt in wrestling or in football, I was like, what can I do instead of football? I was like, oh, I can just go be a professional wrestler. I can't get hurt there. you know, and then again, I'm sure, you know, you've seen it, you've been there, you've seen it firsthand. So, you know.
So at what point do you say, okay, I want to leave the yard and I want to kind of, I guess, go legitimate with this?
So at that time, when I turned 15, I was doing commentary for a company in Florida called American Combat Wrestling, which now they're a part of WWN and it's all a bigger deal now. And I was still yarding. Nobody knew. And I just didn't care. I kept it a big secret because I, you know, around that time, and especially in that particular company, there were a lot of veterans who I didn't want them knowing. And so what happened was I ended up growing up, blah, blah, blah. And then I went to college, and college is when it stopped. College, I coached as a student assistant defensive line coach at Florida Atlantic University for 2 years. And while I was doing that during our off season, I was going to training, and I had to keep that a secret. And this whole thing, it was just a big old secret until Coach Lane Kiffin came in and we decided, I was like, no, this is not for me. And I went ahead and went pro full time.
Did you coach under Kiffin or no? This was, who was your coach?
Nope. Nope. His name is Charlie Partridge. He's okay. now the associate head coach at Pittsburgh. I worked for Lane for 3 days, and Lane doesn't even know who I am. That's the best part. Lane came in as the new head coach. I worked in the office for 2 days. That was basically to clean the computer of my work that I had done to have it on my hard drive and clean out my locker and get out. So I can say that I worked for Lane Kiffin for 3 days.
He just brought in another guy.
I don't know what he did. I know for a fact that he did. He definitely doesn't even know who I am. So. I was in the office for a couple days while he was there, and he has no idea who I am. So,
now, did you meet any – I mean, were you in school with any of those kids from Last Chance U? Because, I mean, the FAU brought in a lot of those kids.
Actually, I was. Tim Bonner and John Franklin III.
Yep.
Both of them. And really cool dudes, man. Really cool dudes. Who is the – it's going to kill me because is it DeAndre Johnson?
Sounds familiar.
He was the quarterback also. I was with all of them. Tim Bonner actually lived right across the hall from me.
DeAndre was a kid from Florida State.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good dudes, man. They really messed up where they were at, but these guys were all good dudes. And they were really humble and wanted to get there, you know, and they did. I actually worked with Tim a little bit because me being a defensive line guy, that's what I've always done. Tim and I kind of we worked together a little bit. He always asked me for advice whenever he saw me in the hallway, and they always addressed me as Coach Coop, which was cool. So I always appreciated that, and, you know, they're all really good dudes.
Tim was a kid from where? From Georgia?
I honest to God, it's going to sound terrible. I don't remember where Tim came from, but I know Tim. He had a lot of issues on Last Chance U though,
yeah.
And he got it together though, which made me very happy. And you know, like I said, he played really well when he was at FAU. So I wish him nothing but the best.
Yeah, Kiffin helped turn that team around, man. Like they went like 10 games his first year or something like that.
He did, man. I went when I was there. I was there for 2 seasons. And, you know, we went, let's see, what was it? We went 6-22, something like that. Whatever adds up to 24 games.
Sure.
Or whatever the hell. So we would have been 6-18. Thank you.
Yeah.
See, I was a history major. it was bad. But you know what? At the end of the day, and I say this, and this will probably get me in trouble one day, I think they gave our coach the shaft. I think they really screwed him big, and by kind of lying to him and basically telling him, you know, we want you to change a culture, we want you to do this and that, and then as it turned out, all they cared about was winning. And I'm like, and he basically said in his interview, he's like, well, if you wanted me to just win games, then I would have done everything differently. And I feel like they kind of screwed him over. And it was a crazy thing how one day I'm an assistant and I'm coaching against Middle Tennessee and I'm signaling in defensive calls, and within 24 hours I'm cleaning out my locker. It was insane helping my head coach clean out his office. It was an insane day. And
any Lane Kiffin stories from campus, or any Lane Kiffin stories you can repeat that you heard?
Man, Joey Freshwater.
Joey Freshwater is the man.
Joey Freshwater is all over the place, man. When I quit doing football at FAU.
And Joey Freshwater, by the way, the story behind that was his Tinder name, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, Lane Kiffin got on Tinder and he called himself Joey Freshwater. And that was how he's picking up chicks. Was he still married at the time?
I don't remember, but Lane Kiffin is a pimp, man. That guy, look, when I tell you that when I had my fair share of drinking issues when I was in college, so did everybody else. So, yeah, nobody can get on me. I used to go out to the clubs a little bit, and Joey Freshwater was always out, man. And that was really cool. I'm like, wow. Lane Kiffin out here with all the college kids. Go home, Kiffin. Like, you know, what are you doing? But I can't diss him because he's like 40 and, you know, he's still scoring chicks. So,
God bless.
Yeah.
God bless. I mean, nice work if you can get it.
He's a legend. Lane Kiffin's a legend. So.
And now he's at Ole Miss.
And now he's at Ole Miss, where he's going to lose to – he'll lose to all the big boys in the division. He'll beat all the non-so-good ones. And he'll end up middle of the road. I hope the best for him, though. I really do. Like, he's got a lot of a couple of my friends coach on that staff and work for him. So I really do wish them the best.
Just one of the shadiest coaches imaginable at the shadiest university imaginable. It's going to be fucking fireworks.
Hey, man. Hey, if you're going to win, you're going to win.
Just win, baby.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So that egg bowl. I mean, that's going to be appointment viewing with him and Leech.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Between – when you have those two individuals – like, I don't even know – Coach Leech is – I mean, that guy had a class. He was teaching class at Washington State. Like, that shouldn't be allowed. But Coach Leech is such a legend that he can do whatever the hell.
Unbelievable. So you get out of college and you decide to kind of make wrestling a go.
Yep.
You get legitimately trained, I guess?
Yeah, I was with Blanco Loco. I was part of the International Superstars group that we don't really discuss anymore.
Fair.
That whole thing fell apart, but those two are doing their thing, and I'm glad for them. You know, we've definitely separated our differences, you know, and have been really cool to one another. And you know, I have no hard feelings towards them. I think those guys are hella talented, and you know, them getting booked all over the country speaks for itself. And I was with Blanco Loco, and he really pushed me. I've known Blanco since I was a 15-year-old kid commentating in ACW. You know, he pushed me. He taught me cool things. He kind of let me be me and let me do my thing. And when we decided all split, we've kind of – it's funny. We've talked about it since then, and we've all basically, wow, this was the perfect thing for all of us, was for Zach to be a singles guy like he should have been, for Blanco to be a kind of a mixed tag guy, singles guy, Ellie to be her own thing, you know. It was one of those things where it was a very, very bad split, but very quickly we were able to reconcile everything. And but yes, I was taken under his wing, and I learned a lot of the business from Off of the Wild Samoan. I was over there for a little bit. I worked for his company, WXW, and he and Rocky Johnson were always there at the shows and taking care of us and really teaching me some really cool things. And really a lot of the business side, but they also taught me how to work. You know, they really taught me, hey, you don't have to do stupid bumps to get over. And I do a lot of stupid bumps, but I also know when to do them. Yeah. And I accredit that to Pops, as I call him, a lot. So
yeah, because he's trained a litany of guys.
Batista and Gangrel and I mean, the list just goes on. Kona Reeves, you know, on and on and on and on and on. I couldn't even tell you. Billy Kidman, you know, who's also, by the way, one of my old favorites, who, you know, everyone's like, Billy Kidman. I'm like, yes, Billy Kidman.
Oh, no, he's a wealth of information from everyone I've heard. He's just a guy that, like, knows everything and teaches it really well.
Oh, yeah, Billy Kidman's the man. When I've been fortunate enough to do extra work a couple times, and Billy Kidman's always been super cool to me, so...
So was wrestling always a full-time thing for you, or were you working other jobs? And at what point did you decide to go all in?
The funniest thing is I decided to go all in, and I had a teaching job lined up. I graduated and went to college to be a teacher, and this was at Port St. Lucie. I was living, and Blanco and me and the International Superstars got a call for OWE UK. It was us and Marco Stunt and Luchasaurus and Shima and T-Hawk and the Knight family. It was a big deal.
It's a hell of a lineup.
2 days before, we had our plane things canceled. We had our plane flight ready to go. I quit my shoot job because I couldn't take the time off, and I quit the job to do this tour, and it gets canceled.
Oh, man.
Because the promoter was a shady piece of shit, and I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on this show.
Yeah, I've been saying fuck the whole time. Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. The promoter was a shady piece of shit and ghosted us all. And everyone, when I got over to the UK for a quick tour over there, told me he was a shady piece of shit. And as it turns out, Shima had no idea what the hell was going on. And, you know, he helps run OWE. It was just an effing mess. And, that's basically it. When I couldn't get another job, you know, I gave up my teaching job and I gave it up. And this is when I decided to go full time and just said, fuck it. And I'm going to do what I need to do to make it.
So one thing you've done that a lot of other guys, you know, probably in your area don't do is you're everywhere. You travel. You decided very early on that you're just going to hop in the car and go. Who taught you that? What is the motivation there? What is the road like? Tell me about your traveling motivation.
Nobody ever taught me that. It was funny. I went on Facebook one day and I saw Blanco post something on Facebook. He's like, I have an open spot in my car. Does anyone want to go? And I said, you know what? I've known this dude since I was 15. Fuck it. I've got nothing to do this weekend. Let me go. And I literally just – I texted him, drove up to his house and hopped in the car. We ended up at – what was it? I think we were at – no, not PWX. I think it was WXW at AFA's, and I ended up getting a spot there immediately, you know. And then I ended up traveling with them more and more. That's how we became the group. But, you know, and then I started getting guys in my car. I don't know if you're familiar with – you know Alex Ocean by chance?
Vaguely.
Alex Ocean, super viral deathmatch guy now. Back when he jumped in the car with me, and I told him, hey, Alex, why don't you start doing like deathmatches? He's like, what? I would never do that. And I'm like, yeah, try it. It's cool. And now look at him. He's like a main attraction doing really big shit. And I'm not saying I had any hand in that. It's just like it was always great to have guys like Alex on the road with me. You know, I had a tag partner when I first started. That didn't really work out well. That was a whole mess. But, you know, it's just funny how being on the road – you know, there are a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of driving back, a lot of sleeping at Pilots because you didn't want to spend money on hotels when you're making absolutely nothing on the road when you start, you know, and meeting a lot of weird people. I got to wrestle Johnny Swinger. What a random ass match. In Dunlap, Tennessee for four people. Like, what a weird ass night that was where I got to wrestle. It was one of the best matches. It was a fun match. It was me, Rob Killjoy from the Ugly Ducklings, Jason Kincaid, and Caleb Courageous in front of five people at the same building. Like,
that's a hell of weirdest, a match, actually.
It was the weirdest. Well, we ended up on scaffolds jumping off that shit. The scaffold almost slipped out from under me. No kidding, right? Ha ha, Zach Cooper. And, yeah, we did that in front of five people. Rob Killjoy's like, I see scaffolds, I say we do it. And I'm like, yeah, you know, screw it. Let's do it. And
well, Rob's shoot crazy. You shouldn't follow any advice that he gives.
Oh, I love Rob Killjoy. Rob Killjoy he's such a cool dude.
He's a cool guy, but he's crazy.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, hey, you know, everyone in this business is a little crazy.
Because you're coming from Florida. So, because the Florida scene is checkered. Is that a good word?
Yes.
There's some stuff, and there's some not so good people, and there's some stuff you need to avoid, and there's some you need to watch where you step. Is that a good way to put it?
100%. That's one of the big reasons I stayed away from Florida for a while. You know, what I will say is the first match that really made me want to go full time at this and give this my best go was I traveled to Alabama for the first time at a company called New Level Pro, and I got to wrestle O'Shea Edwards.
Oh yeah.
And O'Shea is one of the best people on this planet. I wish I could wrestle O'Shea every day of my life.
He's my favorite human who's a professional wrestler.
We were supposed to do it at Punk Pro at Mania Week, and it didn't happen, obviously. O'Shea is somebody I could wrestle every day, and it's still the grossest burning hammer he's ever given because I never tucked my head and landed straight on my dome. When planning a match with O'Shea, he comes up to me and goes, oh, shit, I'm breaking the fourth wall. Here we go. But hey, powerbomb me on the wooden floor. He's like, why? I'm like, because it's cool. He's like, yeah, you're right. And we did that. And on the burning hammer, I'm like, hey, man, I'm not going to tuck my head. He's like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah. And I did it. And it looked sick as shit. It's on my Instagram. But
that's real, you know, stupid.
Oh, yeah, I know. And, you know, it was just really cool how being on the road and happening to message Dylan Hales at the right time and saying, hey, man, listen, I'm in Tennessee. Is there any way I could get a spot? And he put me in a scramble. And it couldn't have gone any better because then I ended up wrestling Logan Stunt and beating the ever-living shit out of him. And then now being a mainstay at Southern Underground.
I was there, man. It was great.
Yeah, man. And, you know, the big thing for me, and it was probably one of my favorite moments of all time. And I'm basically just putting people over at this point. But Manders and Garvin, man, at SCI Futures was...
Yeah, I was going to get to that match. Yeah, that was the breakout for all three of you. I had Big Beef on, and I had Manders on. And both of them have referred to that match as just their, like, coming out party, basically. And I think for you as well, that match, SCI Futures, was just a revelation.
I'm so glad that they think that, too, because that match for me was just so much fun, man. People underestimate a match with just a bunch of big dudes because but you know what? I feel like guys like me, Manders, Garvin, Derek Neal is another who I know is a big dude who likes to go. O'Shea, you know, we just want to beat the shit out of each other, man. And that's just – and that's fun, man. We can move. We can go. And it's just fun, man. It's fun to watch. And, you know, that match, as well as my match with Daniel Maccabe up in Seattle. Dan is, and I say this to everybody, and I'm sure Dan's probably tired of hearing it by now. Dan, to me, is the best wrestler that's not signed right now.
Fully agree. Fully agree.
Dan is insanely talented, and he has made me look 10 times better than I really am twice. And
yeah, that match killed. Your match in Seattle was absolutely amazing.
I respect Dan more than I could even speak on. And like I said, I'm sure he's probably tired of hearing that from my mind. He probably knows I'm a huge Maccabe fan. And, you know, I hope we get a round three sometime.
So you're making a go in wrestling. You're traveling. At what point do you kind of get on bigger radars? Was it the Futures match?
You know what, man? I got a shot up in Seattle without a cause because I met Dave Turner, the Black Sheep, at a Fest wrestling show in Gainesville. Didn't wrestle, just went. And I ended up getting a shot at without a cause, wrestled Maccabe. The match was insane. And that match helped me out a little bit. But, yeah, I would definitely say it was the Futures match. The Futures match put me on the radar, you know, and Southern Underground. And then, of course, the second match with Dan really helped too. But, you know, those were the two. And then now Southern Underground and now Action. That's really – Matt Griffin had no idea who I was. I was not booked on Futures through Matt. And now Matt and I, obviously, as you can tell, I'm becoming an Action guy now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was supposed to wrestle Benjamin Carter, which I can tell you from – Ben and I met each other at Futures and told each other, in a year, you and I are both going to be big time. And sure as shit, look at us. You know,
that was gonna be my match of the show. That was the one match I was looking forward to the most on that show, was you and Carter, because you guys are rocket ships right now.
Yeah, Ben, I told Ben when I first met him at Future, I said, dude, in a year, you're going to be the man. He goes, no, dude, in a year, you're going to be the man. Fast forward 8 months later, I'm signed to MLW, and he's all over the indie scene. You know, it's awesome, and he deserves every bit of it. He literally is this next generation's Ospreay. Like, he's the guy.
Yeah, he's and couldn't be a nicer human being either.
No, such a good dude.
Again, the Canadian, the British thing. You just get these non-American kids, I'm telling you. So you get on the radars. At what point – tell me about the MLW process. How does that whole thing come about?
Out of nowhere.
Really?
I had no idea. No, I was told by a couple people at MLW after I had signed, yeah, you were on their radar for a while. Me, personally, I had zero idea. It came out of a message saying, hi, I'm such and such from MLW. Can we talk to you? I said, yeah, no problem. What's up? You know, obviously I was more professional than that, but he basically he's like, would you be interested in signing with us?
Is that easy?
It was just like that. It was just like that. And my response was, oh, well, shit. Let me figure this out. And read the contract over. I loved what I read. And I loved the plans and everything that's going to happen and take place. And I talked to my family, and we all thought it was awesome. So I went ahead and signed. And I'm very proud to be a part of their brand. And the fact that I get to learn and build with MLW for the time of my contract, I'm very excited.
Because, I mean, this just happened, what, 2-3 months ago?
2-3 months ago. I signed back in January. They announced it in mid-February. It's just, like I said, I'm still a little shocked, and it's still kind of cool to go on my Twitter every once in a while and see, you know, an MLW banner next to my – or in behind me. You know, that's really cool. And, you know, I've been around guys like Hammerstone, and me and Pillman Jr. are buds. And it's just seeing how the success they're having. And, of course, me and Logan Creed are really close. And seeing the success those guys are having in MLW, it's made me only more excited to be there.
So you were about to make your debut for MLW.
Yep.
You're killing it on the indie scene. You're one of the rising stars in wrestling. And then coronavirus hits.
Yeah, you know what? It's crazy. I have had...
And you had a big Mania weekend coming up, too.
I went from no bookings at Mania Week to 11.
You had 11?
In 1 year, yeah. I had 11 bookings. And I dropped down to 9 because I pulled off of 2 shows for reasons that I won't talk about. But what I will say is there, I definitely had every right to pull off of that. And then so I had 9 bookings Mania week, and I was supposed to wrestle guys like Logan Creed, and I was supposed to wrestle Gary J, O'Shea Edwards. I was supposed to be on Pizza Party with O'Shea and Cabana Man Dan. I was supposed to wrestle God, there were just so many damn things that I'm literally losing track. I was going to be a part of Warhausen in some way, shape, or form. You know, it's unfortunate that it got canceled, and the virus is screwing a lot of things up right now. It's just the big thing that I want to try and tell everybody is just to stay motivated, produce content. What I'm producing, the reason I'm producing what I'm producing, the content I'm putting out, isn't because it has anything to do with my character. It's because I just want people to have fun. I want people to smile. Like, yes, I can be a dick in the ring, and usually I'm the heel of everything. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with making people smile while all this shit's going on. And doing something as simple as stupid beer reviews where I'm licking bottles because the beer tastes so good, or telling everyone that it smells like a dead grandmother's toes. Like, you know, it's one of those things where it makes people laugh. And that's really what I'm trying to get out of what I'm doing right now.
So psychologically, how do you kind of move past the fact that, you know, you could have had 11 bookings. You could have had, you know, you're a guy who's a full-time wrestler. This is your sole source of income. I mean, what does it do to you psychologically? What is it doing to you financially? You know, walk me through your hopes and fears and kind of where your brain's at.
Psychologically, I was screwed. Mentally, I was screwed for a little bit. I felt bad for my dad because he had to keep hearing it over and over. Dad, my booking just got canceled. Dad, my booking just got canceled. Dad, my booking just got canceled. I was also supposed to be a part of Primetime, by the way. I completely forgot. I was supposed to be with Gangrel. You know, it's one of those things where it mentally killed me for a bit. Now I'm just trying to be positive. You know, I really am trying to be positive. You know, it's one of those things financials you can't control. It just is what it is. Eventually the money will be flowing again. You know, wrestling will be big again. I had a guy who I respect and have always respected, and I don't know, many people probably didn't see it, but Eric Stevens posted a list today of guys he wanted to work. And my response to him was just one day. And the reason I put one day was because I was hoping maybe one day I could make that list. And Eric's response was that was only half the list. And knowing that I'm on a list of guys that Eric Stevens wants to wrestle is just honoring, and it makes me just want to work harder. So what I've done is I've been doing DDP yoga. I've been trying to eat healthy aside from, you know, you know, drinking a lot of beer and, you know, because I gotta do reviews, man.
It's all for content, you know.
And then, oh hell yeah, and the Reese's cups because I have a problem. And aside from that, I've been eating really clean. I've been trying to do a lot of DDP yoga. I've been running a lot. I just moved to Fort Lauderdale. I've been running around Fort Lauderdale. No, I shouldn't be out. I'm aware, but I'm trying to exercise as much as I can and stay in shape. You know, I'm trying to do the right things. And
because you hadn't even had your MLW debut, had you?
No, I was supposed to debut April 18th in Chicago. It was supposed to be a cool deal, and that had, of course, had to get shut down. I mean, Chicago has literally shut everything down, and you know, at this point, it is what it is, and I hate saying that to people, but mentally, that's just the best way I've been able to put it and be okay and push forward and create content and try and generate as much money through this as I can.
So kind of going forward, I mean, it just seems like you're ramping up for that day when the floodgates open again.
Man, at this point, I'm just ready to go. You know, I can tell you, every time I feel like I'm getting burnt out on wrestling, something really cool happens. And when I say burnt out, I don't mean, yes, I've been wrestling 2 years, I'm done, I'm burnt out. I mean, like, everyone being on a road for, like, 4 weekends in a row, and when you're driving 13-some-on hours and, you know, they are back around in the other, you know, and it ends up at, like, 40 hours of driving throughout the weekend, you're going to get a little
– I've had those, brother. I know how those go. Yeah.
You're going to get a little burnt out. And I'm just ready to go. I've never wanted to work so bad in my life. There's something coming up that hasn't been advertised, and there's a reason it hasn't been advertised that I am a part of on April 1st.
Theoretically. But
theoretically, it's a no fan show. But if Florida obviously runs a full shutdown lockdown, obviously it can't take place.
Sure.
But what I will tell you is my match. I'm going to try and hint at it, and you're going to know. I don't know if your listeners will know, but I'm going to become that dude.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm not going to drop it, but yeah. Oh, yeah. Woo! Awesome.
Which is a match, by the way, I want to get in front of fans, too. Let's clear that up, too. I definitely want that to happen in front of a lot of people, also.
Well, if that doesn't happen there, we're going to bring it up here.
No doubt. I would love to have that happen.
Whew. Oh, man. We just, man. Oh, coronavirus sucks.
It does, man. It definitely hyped, you know, but what it does is, again, it's motivated me and it's hyped me up. It's made me want to wrestle more than ever. It's made me want to be more creative, you know, in content and just in ring and everything. This is definitely not a good thing, but it's definitely something that's allowing a lot of people to be more creative and take time to really just see how bad they just want to get back to it.
So you talk about your show where you've been reviewing beers and stuff like that. What is this show? How can people find it?
It's just 30-second clips on my Twitter, man. I thought about doing a vlog. Everyone does a vlog, so I said no to the vlog.
Well, you have a podcast too, right?
Oh, boy, what a podcast. Yeah, this makes no sense with Zach Cooper and Luke Barron. Is a podcast on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, and iHeartRadio. Every Friday it's released. And we talk about everything from Batman and Batman, how Val Kilmer on his suit had Batman nipples. Everything from there to See No Evil, because nobody pays attention to See No Evil. And what people don't realize is that Vince McMahon one time came on set and demanded that Kane had a 3-foot prosthetic cock.
This is true.
So we talk about that literally every show. We find a way to say the words Kane's 3-foot prosthetic cock. I will get Kane on my show, and the only I don't give a shit about his wrestling. The only thing we'll talk about is his cock, and then. And then we'll talk some serious stuff. We have touched on the virus. We have touched on, you know, mental health awareness and things like that. But, you know, at this point, again, it's really cool when you get feedback once again, kind of like the content, the beer reviews. It's really cool getting feedback of, hey, you made me smile today. And that's really the goal of the whole thing.
So people can find that on iTunes and pretty much any podcatcher.
Yep, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio. It's under the Wrestling Nerds Radio Network, and it's This Makes No Sense with Zach Cooper and Luke Barron.
And then how else can people find you? You got merch, too. You got some fantastic merch, actually.
I have some merch, you guys. I post things on Twitter, Facebook stuff, and I've got 4 shirts right now. I have a Where is the World is Zachary Cooper. It's a ripoff of Carmen Sandiego, because but it's cool.
Which I saw your grandmother wearing, right?
Oh, of course. You know, Graham was super happy to have that, as you could see from her picture. She's never been so excited in her life. She hasn't been that excited since she got her George Foreman grill. You could get a Symphony of Destruction shirt. You can get a This Makes No Sense shirt. You can get a bunch of stuff. And I also have a pro wrestling tee store, which is just Zachary Cooper. You can get some podcast merch as well. And it's a lot of fun. And you guys can definitely get some stuff. And of course, if you want merch, just message me. I'll send you whatever the hell. So.
And that Twitter is?
I am Zach Cooper. And you can also follow the podcast Twitter, which is at TMNS Podcast. And my social media is definitely a mess. And I like to have fun with it, which is really the goal. And like I said, just all have fun right now.
And then Instagram, Facebook, anything like that too?
Facebook is Zach Cooper, or if you know me personally, you can add me on my personal page. I'm super easy to find. It's me and my gorgeous half black girlfriend, and with the fairy godmother at Disney.
Yeah, you really outkicked your coverage there, brother.
I outkicked my coverage so bad, and I'm honored to have her. And or you can find me on Instagram at I am Zach Cooper as well.
Cool. Well, Zach, thank you so much. Seems like you got a great attitude about all this. And we're all rooting for you, ready for you to kick ass in MLW and kick ass in the Indies going forward.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate you letting me come on here and do this.
Zach, appreciate it, man. Best of luck.
Thank you.
On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, Place to Be Nation podcast number 544, JT Scott and guest Jennifer Smith are getting everyone prepared for the hottest show of the summer with a look at SummerSlam Fever from 8-1990. On Body Pressure Luck number 5, 4-time defending champion Ryan Everett battles Derek Cornette and Michael Cook. On Jenny the Gem's number 6, Jenny, Matt, Drew, and Scott are on the march to WrestleMania 9. Rowan Seatwin's episode features Big Fitz and Nick Iggy. In a brand new show called The Great Debate Wrestling, host Andy Atherton, guests Tim Capel, Matt Susan, and John D'Amato discuss a wide variety of topics and scenarios in the world of wrestling. Check out the PlayStation Pop Feed.
There's some great shows that include the Glenn Benton Podcast Hour Spectacular, The Year in Pop, Laughing Theater, DC4U, The Great Debate, Marvel Age, and so much more. And while you're at it, subscribe to a pair of tremendous podcast feeds. Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position, as well as is the home of Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, Rico Drive-In, Telling Stories, and Journey Through Infinity and more. Check out the new North South Connection, brought to you by JT Rosero and Chad Gamble. It's new home for Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way Dance, Jeff Williams Wrestling, and more. We kicked off our 2020 stretch project with the greatest WCW match ever. Check out facebook.com/GWCW matches on the Pro Wrestling Only message board or on Facebook. On our social media pages, the greatest sports logo 2020 tournament's going on. There'll be 4 matchups per day on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter. Be sure to check out PlaceOfNation.com every day. We have articles like Trent SmackDown on Fox Report, The Week in WWE by John Crow, Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, and Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And if you're doing online shopping on Amazon, be sure to click on the Amazon banner on the right side of the PlaceOfNation homepage, or use PlaceOfNation.com/Amazon. It takes you right to Amazon and helps us out with no cost to you.